Welcome to PRN, Pause, Renew, Next, a podcast about soul care, scripture, and stories of faith. I'm Jenny Detweiler, and today I'm excited to share with you the first guest interview of Season 8. I absolutely loved getting to connect with Jen Suen Chen, author of Dim Sum and Faith, How Our Stories Form Our Souls. Jen is a gentle and kind presence, and she invites us to look more closely at our own stories. Jen and her husband spent 25 years in Asia working with pioneers, and now they live in the Pacific Northwest, where she's a spiritual director and co-director of Summit Clear, a mentoring organization for those in cross-cultural work. I so appreciate Jen's book, as well as the wisdom she offers in this conversation. Talking with and listening to her is like a breath of fresh air. You're going to completely agree. So I invite you to grab a cup of warm tea or coffee, gather around, quiet your soul, and get curious about your own story as you listen. So with that, let's jump into the conversation. Well, Jen, welcome to the podcast. I'm so glad to have you. Would you like to share a little bit about yourself, your ministry, as much or as little as you'd like people to know?
Yeah, thanks, Jenny, for the opportunity to be with you this morning. A little bit about myself. I'm a mom of four, and I have, they're all adult kids, two married sons, and became a grandma, which I'm referring to myself as Popo, which is a Cantonese name for grandma, one of them. And I have a beautiful granddaughter named Mia. She was born 5 weeks ago today. She's precious. And I have three sons and a daughter. So being a mom, next to being a wife of 30 years to my husband, John, being a mom has been one of the greatest things and most transformative things in my life, actually. The furnace of my transformation. And then ministry, I went overseas as a single to serve in Asia, and then went back after we were married with a little baby, and we spent 25 years in Asia, and we're still with our same organization. And currently just serving in the area of spiritual direction, leadership coaching, mentoring, lots of people globally, but more recently just the Lord calling us back to the States and ministering here from the Pacific Northwest. So in various different spaces these days, but my favorite is just sitting across, whether it's a Zoom screen or a cup of coffee with someone and listening to their hearts and stories.
Well, I'm so glad that you're here. And also congratulations on becoming a grandmother. That's amazing.
Thank you.
I agree with you about the transformative furnace of motherhood. That has been my experience as well. A blessing, but goodness, it's sanctifying.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the truth. And so what you didn't mention, but what we're going to talk about today is that you're an author.
Yes.
Was this your first book?
It is my first book. Yes.
So that's a big deal. Like last week, as we're recording, it came out.
Yes.
So your book is titled Dim Sum and Faith, How Our Stories Form Our Souls. I saw one of the taglines on the internet, I think through InterVarsity, said, "You have a place at God's table." I love that. Can you share for those who are unfamiliar about dim sum, what kind of foods and presence it represents, what it means, and how it serves as a metaphor for entering into our stories?
The dim sum table, my family's from Hong Kong, and dim sum is typically experienced it's a restaurant experience. People don't necessarily do it at home because it's a lot of different foods. So when I was growing up, they're pushing carts around and little dishes, and you get to just pick what you want. And it's a kid's dream because you're eating with lots of people, and it's family and it's friends. It's usually around a big table, round table. And as a kid, I think I just remember like being able to pick what our favorites were every weekend when we went out. I write in my book that it's a messy space. It's awkward. It's loud. It's intergenerational. It's family. Whether it's biologically related family or just family by virtue of just like the immigrant experience, I think draws you together into a community. I think we find each other. I think dim sum really serves as a metaphor in that there's just so many versions of it, what you can eat. There isn't one singular food. It's salty, it's sweet, it's baked, it's steamed, it's fried. And I think that it serves as a metaphor for our stories. There isn't one singular way our stories, you know, emerge, are told, and I think our journeys with God in the same way are that they're cyclical and they're not linear. It's not prescriptive. It's descriptive. So even as I'm describing the table, I think it in some ways can, it relates to how we, can describe our journeys with God and how our souls are being formed.
Yeah, that's good. It's so communal too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
So you write that this book was born out of many years of asking, holding, wondering, and living many questions from listening and being listened to, listening to God's voice and presence. Would you like to share about your journey of your own story work and what that's been like and what's brought you to this point?
You know, I think I've always really been fascinated by story. I think stories are such a way in which we can walk in each other's shoes. Like, even though I don't have the same story as you or to the person sitting next to me on the bus, when we pause to listen, we'll discover, wow, there's elements that are similar, and maybe emotions and feelings that we've had, thoughts that might be similar, but are the ways in which our stories have been held, the container and the ways they unfolded, our lives are just so different from each other. We just don't all experience life in the same way. Mm-hmm. And so I think as an Asian American in particular, family more recent immigrants, I think growing up, I realized like my story is just really different than the ones in my community, the ones that are being told at school, the ones I'm reading in books, and which I think eventually became a way in which God used it to just help me, like compassion, I think, as I grew for my own story. But then as I moved overseas and began to listen to men and women from all different spheres of society, and realizing like it's not even just answering questions. Sometimes we're just holding them. Sometimes we have to linger long enough in a story to let it impact us, mm-hmm. and not move on so fast. And especially we are doing it cross-culturally, so you're paying attention to different things as you're listening to stories. So it's not just words. It's language as well. We moved to several places in Asia, which required learning new languages. So I think it was like simultaneous. I think as I heard people's stories, it made me think about my own. And the last probably, 12 to 15 years of my life, I think is when I began to write more, just be more intentional about writing down the story of today. You know, we don't even need to worry about like what happened 10 years ago, but what just really like what happened today? How did I notice God today? How is God present in my day? And so I think it's just been a journey. And becoming more familiar with my story and asking questions with God, and even some deep counseling that I did, deep leadership 360 evaluation I did about 10, 12 years ago, and in some ways wrecked me. Uh-huh. I think it burst into my like, I'm okay, I made it, we're good, little world to like grief and honesty, a deeper honesty emerged. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I'm thankful for, and you write about it so beautifully. I think it's a beautiful invitation to others to be able to do the same mm-hmm. thing. And I know you've sat with so many people who are doing their own work in that way that you are a compassionate guide, I think. So you're an author, you've done mission work and cross-cultural work, you've mentored and served as a spiritual director and a story work coach. What has being present with people in all those different capacities taught you about telling, hearing, and discerning people's stories?
There's so many things, Jenny, but I think what comes to mind this morning is that life is more painful than we could ever imagine, and also so much more beautiful than we could ever imagine. The display of glory, God's glory in those he has made in his people across the globe. Like, I think you see just resilience. I think what I've heard stories, and I look, sit across from people, and I think, how did you make it? Mm-hmm. How did you endure? How did you, without maybe the privileges or the access to resources that we might in the West deem as most important? And I think when I in particular meet believers in other countries who have found Jesus and found him to be just as loving as I have discovered him and just as kind, I think, in spite of the pain and the grief and losses that we've endured, I think we are more alike mm-hmm. than we know. And I think we just need time to listen. Mm-hmm. And stories are told not just in our words. I think in being present to someone, and you get to experience the laughter, the tears, you get to experience even someone's anger. If you get to be in person, you experience someone's hospitality and their presence. I think all of that has just taught me, that life perhaps isn't to be figured out, to be delineated into like 10 steps to happiness or 5 steps to peace or whatever it is that we're looking for. But maybe it's far more mysterious. God's presence with us in the middle, which is where I think we spend most of our days, is in the middle.
That's a very good word. That's beautiful. Yes. Right at the beginning, what you said about that life is full of more sorrow and more pain than you can imagine, and there's more beauty than you can imagine. Mm-hmm. What that took me to was the Lord is really teaching me this year, about Philippians 3, where he says that I want to know you, the power of your resurrection, and the fellowship of your suffering. And those are on two very different ends of the spectrum. And he's with us in both. Yeah. And when we walk with him, we see both. Yeah, yes, I think that's beautiful. So I really appreciate your authenticity with telling your own story in your book. And the invitation you offer readers to begin our own journeys. You wrote in there about your own counseling experience, that your counselor once told you, growing up means growing up on the inside and becoming more childlike on the outside. I really love that. I feel like that's a very layered statement. Can you share a little bit about what that means to you?
You know, when I first heard it, it was probably about 20 years ago, and I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And Bruce spoke to us about how all of us we grew up on the outside, right? Human development, we grow up and we become adults from childhood to adulthood. But most of us remain very childish on the inside, right? Mm-hmm. We've all experienced that in our own selves in a recent interaction. All of us can point to like, I ran into childishness.
Yes.
Like someone's, tantrum, or we've witnessed it, whether we're out in public or in our own homes. But I think this call to that the kingdom of heaven that Jesus calls us to is spoken of 84 times. Jesus says, the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven, the invitation. And he says, the kingdom of God is for children. And essentially the invitation is like, if you're not going to be like kids, then the kingdom of God isn't for you. Which makes I say that, and yet I'm like, what does that even mean? Right? So I think it's this call out of childishness, but the call into childlikeness, right? The children came to Jesus and they knew they belonged, mm-hmm. right? You watch your kids, like before the world hits them or before we tell them Jesus doesn't talk like that or whatever it is that we say to try and protect them. Kids are born hearing God and they're born with faith. They're born believing they belong until someone tells them they don't, right? Mm-hmm. So I think this idea of like growing up in the inside is this like, yeah, awareness of like, oh, the self and my false self and the truest self in Christ, and that emerges when I can begin to name things. Like I don't have to move in this old way anymore. I can move in greater freedom. So there's this growing up on the inside where I know I am loved. I'm loved first. So when I walk into every room, I remember that, Jen, you're loved first. So I don't need people to see me. I don't need, you know, whatever it is that I'm struggling with, I can bring that. But it takes naming it, right? In the maturity, I think, is just like the naming and then laying down of like, Jesus, I receive who you say I am, which I think we all say, and yet I think we just don't know how to practice it.
Yeah.
Which is what I was trying to write in the book. It's just like ordinary moments with Jesus might look like this, right? So this growing up on the inside, but then that what emerges is a childlikeness that believes like I can walk into a room and believe there's belonging, and I can offer then belonging to others, that I can pray with childlike faith that God will answer and bring healing in ways that perhaps would feel so impossible in the human understanding. And yet I believe my God can do it because he is Emmanuel, God with us. Mm-hmm. And so I believe the withness of God is here in this moment. So I think at this point, you know, 20 years later, holding that statement of just growing up on the inside continues to be that invitation. I don't think I'm done. I don't think we'll be done until we reach heaven where we get to see in full. But in this middle space that we occupy now is this growing up, this everyday grow me up, Lord, on the inside.
Yeah.
And give me faith to walk in childlikeness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah, there's so much to that statement. It seems so simple, and it's not simple at all, really.
No.
So you split your book into four different sections, and then you've written chapters inside of each of those. Mm-hmm. Your sections are shaping, undoing, awakening, and remaking. Can you briefly explore each of those with us and what they're about?
Yeah. So I think I was trying to describe perhaps this formation journey that we're on that's not just linear, mm-hmm. point A to point B, but this like moving through spaces. So shaping, identifying the stories that have really shaped us, have formed us, and really formed in childhood, our view of God, relationships, how relationships work, how I work, how I show up in the world, how others experience me, what's good, what's bad, all in our childhood years. And you're a therapist, so I'm not sure why I'm saying this out loud, but here I am. And then I think identifying like the undoing stories, the undoing movement in our life, where perhaps is more uncomfortable. We might describe them as really hard moments, could be internal or external crisis, could be seasons where we might call it wilderness or winter or darkness. It could show up in, I think seasons of depression or depressive thoughts. It could be however, whatever you want to put into that space. But I think we're not as comfortable, I think, talking about those moments. We like the victorious, like, and I came out. So it's hard when we find ourselves here and we can't think ourselves or talk ourselves out or do ourselves out, right? Where we're like, I think when we're young, I think we think, well, we're just going to read more the Bible, or we're going to pray more. Or we're going to just pick up a discipline, which is important. And yet somehow the mystery of how God meets us in these undoing spaces, I think we need to explore with him. And I think with others. So I think So that's shaping and undoing. And awakening, I think, is like as God brings us it out of these undoing moments and into awakening, where he awakens our souls to discover more of his love. I think really it is that. I think life is really about the discovery of his love. Paul writes that, right? Oh, that together with all the saints, with all of God's kids, that you would discover the height and breadth and length and depth of his love. It's not just discovered by yourself, yeah, but together. And I think as an Asian American, like I, from my collective worldview, there's this togetherness of our spiritual formation that we don't often speak of.
Yes.
So we were shaped in community, whether we know it or not, in a group, whatever that group was, whatever family looked like. It's not just what we think of, like it's not always two parents and your siblings. It's sometimes no parents. Maybe sometimes it's one parent. Maybe it's grandparents. Maybe it's an auntie or uncle. So we have these communities that we're born into, and then the undoing happens also in community. The awakening happens. But I think often we try to navigate it by ourselves, and that's where I think we struggle most. But in the awakening is that discovery more of God's love in this, and then in the reshaping, the remaking of our souls is like the deepening. I think if I think about the canyons of our soul, like God's just, that the weather like deepens the canyon. We took a trip out with our youngest during a college spring break to Antelope Canyon in Zion National Park. And those canyons are crazy. They're beautiful, but they've endured such weather. Such weather. And I think of our souls being that as well. We've all endured a lot of weathering. And, but we don't all end up with words to describe unless we do some work around what has happened. Because what can happen is then there can be bitterness and resentment. And that darkness doesn't always result in fruit.
Yeah.
But I think as we do the work of like, God, where have you been? Where were you? Where are you in community? I think we can discover this journey, which God promises to take us through, of transformation of our minds and hearts, the conforming of us to Christ, the sanctifying. He promises to finish the work he started in each of us. And so the framework of the forming, the shaping and undoing and awakening and remaking was just an attempt at maybe describing that formation journey that we're on.
Yeah. And you did such a beautiful job of it. Just as we're talking right now, and as you're describing it, one of the things that feels a little bit like a paradox to me is that you're right, this journey is supposed to be in community, and that's what the body of Christ is for. God didn't make us to do things by ourselves.
Right, right.
He wants to be present with us, but he also put people in our lives to be present with us.
Yeah.
And yet, a lot of times I notice for me, like what I'm seeing happen collectively across a lot of things in the U.S. right now and probably across the world, and in my office, as I'm hearing other people tell their stories, their undoing stories, I think very often a lot of the undoing does feel very alone. Like maybe we came out of a family system.
Yeah.
And then we realized that some of the ways that we were shaped were not so healthy. Mm-hmm. And who do we talk to about that? Because that group was a part of maybe what is now being undone.
The harm. You know? Yes. Yes.
Or, I mean, I'm even thinking about immigrants who have left their culture and are now in a new place. And some of the undoing feels very lonely. And so the Lord meets us there too, but I'm curious what it looks like to find community. I mean, I have some thoughts about that, but I know you do too. What it looks like to find community and the people that are healthy to surround you as God has you in those seasons.
Yeah.
What has that looked like for you? And what do you recommend for those who are listening that maybe don't have people present or feel like their community maybe doesn't get what they're going through or can't understand what they're going through?
Yeah. Jenny, I think this is really, where it is most needed is spaces to hold one another. We're just not good at it.
I know.
We want to fix. So we're so uncomfortable with our own, I think, our own sorrow. Mm-hmm. So to have the spaciousness to hold another just takes work. And so I think really my invitation in this book is really like, could we do this together? Like even I write, would you take this book and do it with someone else? Mm-hmm. So that would be my first. I'm not trying to promote myself, but it's like, would you take the book and would you walk with someone and just take those questions at the end? That if God can hold us and meet us in this place, and he is not fussed.
Yeah.
He's right. Not fussed with us. And I think the way we think he is, so I think that's a beginning, just a step. Get the book, find a friend, one friend, and just maybe just try. Because mm-hmm. it's someone else telling you what to do. Because I think sometimes when we're just meeting for coffee, it's like, how do we take this conversation and make it deeper?
Uh-huh.
Right? Yeah. We meet with someone for coffee. I hope everyone gets to do that once a week or once every couple of weeks.
You know, right? You and I always probably take things deeper because that's who we are and what we do.
Yeah.
I do think you're right. Some people may have a harder time taking it down to the next level or
get beyond what I did over the weekend or what mm-hmm. food I ate, or which is fine. It's lovely to know those things. However, if I just have 90 minutes with you, Jenny, I want to know where you are. I want to know your heart. Even though we've just met, I want to know what your kids did today and what made the house harried. You know, I want to know what you're holding. And I think it's the grace and the compassion to just start. Let's just start. It's awkward. We're in a loud restaurant eating dim sum and we're just grabbing food and it's crazy and everyone's talking over each other. And then we settle down. And then we begin to drink tea. Mm-hmm. And then I pause and I look at you and I'm, how are you? And I want to know how you are, really, like even if you don't have words for it. We're so quick, I think, to, our weeks are full of conversations like this, like, how are you? Oh, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. Fine, tired, stressed, mm-hmm. kids, you know, we say things like that, right? But then, no, I don't know. Tell me, what is it about it? I do this at Target. I do it at the grocery store. People start crying. People I've never met. They just want to be heard in a moment, right? I think it takes carving out that spaciousness in our own lives, right? Facing my own discomfort with my lack of answers around sorrow and pain and things that are painful and hard. You know, as I was writing, I wrote and shared a lot with my mom and my dad. And I was doing my own work and then was giving them my mom chapters to read. And my mom, as a first generation Chinese American from Hong Kong, she's read my book twice. And she's 83. My parents are pastors, the most incredible people in the world. And we've grown so much together. And she says to me the other day, Janet, makes me want to do more work on my story. And I think, okay, this crosses cultures. It's not just if we have time, that my mom at 83 is saying, Jesus, keep showing me areas in my life for greater freedom. Mm-hmm. So I think that we can just start where we are. I think looking for the perfect community isn't going to work. And if family has been a space of greatest harming, then maybe asking the Lord, who else would you bring? Mm-hmm. Not everybody deserves to hear our stories. That's not what we're asking. They're sacred spaces. Mm-hmm. But I think finding one or two, you know, if we're speaking to women, you know, I think we're hardwired as women for friendship. We just need it. I mean, it's in our DNA mm-hmm. as humans. But I think as women, we're just relational. We're extra.
We are. I agree with you.
And I love being extra, right? And I think to the woman who says, am I too much? I say, no, bring it all.
That's right.
But how can we create communities where we can bring it all? And I think it takes one or two of us in a community saying, we're not going to do it the same way. Mm-hmm. I don't want these ladies' teas to just be like, we're all good. Everything's great. And here are four answers and work harder to love Jesus. Like, mm-hmm. but what would we do if we just hold space for reflection? we gave us each other 15 minutes of silence to be with Jesus together. And then when we met to pray, it wasn't like everyone else, our prayer requests in the list, but it's like, here's what's stirring. Here's what I want. What are you wondering about? It's how I often start a conversation with someone. What are you holding today?
Yeah.
What's a question you're asking? And so I think it, as I just rambled, there's obviously no singular way, but I think we just have to try.
Yeah.
Because we want more.
So yeah. I heard two things, actually, like I'm pulling away from what you just shared, and all of that was very helpful. One is, if we are the listener and we're with somebody who is telling their stories to us, that is a gift that we can be present for, and it may make us uncomfortable, but we can hold space and be present in the way mm-hmm. that we know how to be. Mm-hmm. And that actually it's a gift if somebody mm-hmm. is bringing that to us, to be able to be with them and mm-hmm. just listen. You don't have to have advice. Just be a friend. And the second thing I'm hearing is that a community doesn't have to look like a certain thing. Mm-hmm. It might be one or two safe people in your life. Mm-hmm. Could be mm-hmm. a therapist. It could mm-hmm. be a friend from church. Mm-hmm. It could be a mom who's in your mom group. It mm-hmm. could be a spiritual director or mm-hmm. a few different people, your mother, whoever, who is mm-hmm. a safe person who can hold your story with you and not run screaming from the room and still loves you at the end of the day and is going to be there mm-hmm. with you and pray with you through the Lord taking you through the undoing and the awakening and the remaking. Mm-hmm. And that he may bring different people in different seasons too. So maybe we don't need to think of it looking like a very specific thing.
Right.
But the Lord will bring us community in the way that we need it.
Yeah. And it takes courage.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all want it. So I think that we can assume, it'd be safe to assume, your neighbor next door wants it.
That's right.
We all want it, right? Mm-hmm. We just don't know how to get it. Yeah. So we really like to talk about community, and we really like to critique our communities at the same time.
That's true.
But here we are. True. Here we are, and mm-hmm. we just have to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so in your book, speaking of going through sacred spaces and wounds and things, you share a quote from Richard Rohr that says, "Wounds often begin as ordinary wounds and must become sacred to grow. See these wounds as a way through, as Jesus did. They become sacred wounds rather than scars to deny, disguise, or project onto others." You said mm-hmm. sacred wounds can be places of deep transformation when we let God's mm-hmm. Spirit come and when we stop seeing our wounds as obstacles. It's mm-hmm. not that we celebrate our wounding. Rather, mm-hmm. there's another way to see our pain.
Mm.
This season on the podcast, I feel like the Lord is bringing us a theme of resilience. And I'm considering, what does it mean to be resilient? We're going to be talking a lot about that this season. To me, like, this quote and thinking about wounds in this way is one form of resilience. And so in reading your book, I know that the Lord has done a lot of things in you, a lot of wounding things and a lot mm-hmm. of healing things. Mm-hmm. How has the Lord helped you to be resilient, even in the midst of ongoing suffering?
Thanks, Jenny. That's a good question. I think when I think about sacred wounds, I think just even as I hear you read that quote back to me, I think of the breath of his, you know, God's breath over our lives as healing. But it takes like me opening up and letting him do that. So I think we want to hide the wounded places. But what we don't realize is it eventually shows up, and it can show up in bitterness, and it's the stuff we say out the side of our mouths. It's the stuff we mutter under our breath. Our resentment. Perhaps things didn't go the way we thought, our disappointments. It's okay to be disappointed, and we hold a lot of disappointments. All of us do. But what do we do with that? And so for many of us, like we tell ourselves a story, and we've believed the story. So the story we tell is a story we believe. And while that might be one facet of it, how else would God help us tell that story? And I think that's what the invitation is to, like, maybe perhaps with God and with others. It's not just like, go find another way to reframe it. We're not talking about that. But like, how else would God want me to see that he is his presence? Perhaps it was bigger, that God has always been working, that I am not forgotten. So I think when we are able to go back there with someone and begin to, even just someone reflecting back to me, my husband did this with me. Even yesterday, we were sitting on the outside and we were going back to a story actually of college for me. And he looked me in the eye and he said this one statement, and he's heard the story, and he was so sweet. He read my final chapter yesterday. It's actually really scary to have the people closest to you to read your book. So he read the last chapter and he came to me just really just tender. And he said, honey, you were so honest and you finished the book so well. And it wasn't like a nice clean bow that we're done. So here's how. There's just this unfolding that we still wait for. There's this healing that we still long for. So I think we can be resilient in the middle. So to your point of like, as these wounds to become sacred is maybe the breath of God, letting his breath over that. Breathe your healing. I've hidden it away. I've locked it up. I've told myself it doesn't matter. See, I turned out, which is what a lot of people are like, I don't remember anything. And see, I turned out. And I think, yeah, it depends on what we call turning out.
Yeah.
But when we think about our relationships, so we long to be flourishing, we long to flourish in the world, to live lives that are vibrant and radiant and glorious. I think this is what our calling is. But there's so much pain. So to let God come and breathe life again over those dead places, things that we told ourselves would never bloom again, places of our lives where we would, yeah. So I think there's this both end, as God's healing and he's making us resilient. He's helping us. Excuse me, the printer's going. Someone in the house is printing right now. But yeah, I think just the idea of resilience is possible mm-hmm. in the middle. Mm-hmm.
That is a good word, because you know what? I find myself, even as I've been a counselor for many, many years, you know, even personally, like, okay, I'll get through this season and then God will heal me of it and I can move on, you know?
Right.
And that's never the way of it, is it? It's like we're on this, Paul talks about running a race. There's not an end to the race till you get to the end of the race. It's not like, it's not like you get to stop in the middle and get in a hammock, you know, right. for your second leg, you know.
That's right.
You're right. We're constantly moving through life. Life doesn't stop. We're constantly moving. And the Lord has grace. I love the idea of him breathing over us. Mm. So in some of the trauma training that I've been through, the imagery that I've gotten for what trauma is like if our lives are like a river, hard things happen. Some of them are like little pebbles that get thrown in. Some of them are like big boulders. Now our lives can handle a couple, that's just gonna happen. But if we've had like major trauma, like lots of boulders that have been thrown in, the water's not gonna stop, it's gonna keep going, but it's gonna get really choppy. That water's gonna get really choppy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not gonna be peaceful anymore, and our nervous systems are not gonna feel peaceful anymore all that. So I think that there's a lot of ways that we can care for and attend to those wounds, and some of them may need professional help.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of the Lord, like, breathing. I mean, he breathed life into us at the beginning.
Yes.
Resilience is his Holy Spirit, the river of life.
Yeah.
That gives us what we need, that breathes into us. And I really love that idea. So as you were talking, I was thinking about him coming and gently, like, taking the stuff out of the river, helping us sort through the rocks.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful picture. I love that, Jenny.
Is there anything you wanted to share that I didn't give you a chance to?
I think that, you know, people have been asking me, like, to your question, like, how do I begin? And I think just asking someone, you know, a question, that might be just outside your normal question. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you wish your family knew about you? Or what happened this week that you didn't get a chance to share about? Mm-hmm. Just little, just something, just beginning. I used to write good questions down. Like, I think them or hear them, and I'd be like, that's a good question. And I'd write it down in my journal, and I'd start practicing to use them. And I don't do that anymore. I think in the practice of it, it's just become, I live questions. My kids are like, this is mom. This is just what she does. And I find they all do that. They do that in their workplaces. But I think just we all have to begin somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I think that the grace to just begin again today, this afternoon, tonight, God is a God of new beginnings. And His grace is, I think the longer I walk with Jesus, I don't even know the depths of His love. Mm-hmm. And I'm still very overwhelmed by that. And I write that, one of the quotes is my father in the second to last chapter, you know, at his age, pastoring still. And he says, I'm still overwhelmed by the love of God. Mm-hmm. Still brings me to tears. And I think that's it. I think it's childlikeness. That's childlikeness there. Mm-hmm. To be so overwhelmed by the love of God. I'm not trying to be somebody. I'm going to stop trying to pretend to be who I'm not. And I'm going to be a daughter who knows she's loved, knows she belongs, and can walk out into the world and offer that to others. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's beautiful. As I was reading, I was just really curious. You mentioned really love and personality stuff. I have a guess about what yours is. But yeah, what is your, like, the personality test that you like to take? What have you found out about yourself?
I love, you know, every kind, I think, just as a people developer, the work I do. I love discovery. So from, you know, the Sacred Pathways, Gary Thomas's, like, how do we enjoy God and worship, to the Enneagram. I think I use that a lot. Not as a way to, I don't type someone, but it's just a way of understanding perhaps lenses, mm-hmm. through which we experience life. I find that to be a really helpful one. I don't want any of these assessments to be weapons. I think, right. I've seen it weaponized, and I just really, so I like to use it stealthily. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also people, you know, can, and we have all sorts of thoughts around all of them. Strength Finders, mm-hmm. MBTI, mm-hmm. Even the FIROB and other things that look at our stress, like, mm-hmm. stress tests are really good, like, for the moment, mm-hmm. like, how much stress are you under? So many of them, but I probably use the MBTI and Strength Finders and Enneagram the most.
Mm-hmm. Is it okay if I ask, are you an Enneagram too?
Absolutely. Lots of tears right there.
As am I, which is probably why I liked your book so much, because it very closely mirrored a lot of things that I've had to learn for myself
too. Oh, Lord, help us.
And why we're probably interested in, like, being present with people, that's not hard for us, right? But taking care of our own needs in the midst of it, or paying attention to what's going on the inside and not just what's happening with other people, that's that requires work too.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And then just, I think the holding space is that I don't have to fix.
That's right.
Actually don't have anything to say because it's so hard. And I can't help you. I don't think I can actually help you, which I really want to help you. But could I just be with you? Mm-hmm. And somehow God will help.
Mm-hmm. So people who have listened to my podcast for a long time know I love the Enneagram, and I find it to be really helpful that way too. Mm-hmm. It is easy to type people, but I find it to be a really helpful way of seeing where people are coming from and how they're viewing the world. Not clinically, not like there's anything wrong, but just like this is what you're bringing to the world and how you're seeing the world and how you're moving through the world. And it's just really helpful, I think.
Yes. I think it's like looking for language, right? Mm-hmm. Could you do this in stress? Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, could this possibly be? And as for as many shades of yellow there are, you know, there's just, or purple, there's not one Enneagram 2 or 4. Right. And that God is always able to change and grow us. But as an Enneagram coach, I find it to be really, if people want to use it, then I bring that lens.
Yeah. In. Yeah. And I think each personality type has its own strengths.
Absolutely.
And its own weaknesses, right? As do our individual stories, because they're all tailored according to the story that the Lord has us on.
Yes.
Just like you're talking about all the different hues. But I think Enneagram 4s are the only ones who can sit with people's pain and not have an impulse to want to fix it right away. And so that is something that the rest of us really have to work harder on, I think.
Absolutely.
It doesn't come so naturally to just sit. Mm-mm. So I really appreciate how throughout the podcast, really, you've been inviting people to get curious, sit with people. You don't have to fix it.
Yeah.
You can just be present. And that can be true with our own stories as well.
Yeah. And I think I would add, like, the more we learn that, it allows us to be with our kids, if we have kids, to be with our spouse. But with kids in particular, I write, you know, I try to just write a little bit about that, the conversations, especially with my adult kids, holding their stories, knowing that I'm a big part of that. And, you know, our youngest just went back to college for a senior year, and it's been so sweet. And every year we keep growing. I'm just so grateful we had this summer together. But, if we don't do the work, then we can't hold them, and we'll miss out on the beauty of relationships with our adult kids.
Yeah.
It's so amazing. It's so amazing what you can have when we do the work.
I don't have any fully adult children yet. My first one just left for college, but I'm going to tell
you. Okay, congratulations.
Thank you. That was challenging for me to think about with my own kids. It's a little different than listening to other people and their stories. Yes.
Totally. Because you're like, oh yeah, your mom. Yeah, she was terrible.
I want to defend myself. I don't think you're remembering that correctly. I'll tell you what happened.
I wasn't that angry. I didn't say that.
That's right.
Let me add some color into your story. Yes.
But that is a really important invitation too. And I love to hear that. You know, that's what I have to look forward to. So sweet.
Yeah.
So as we end our time together, where can people find you and your book if they want to know more?
Right now, on IVP's website, Amazon is probably where most of the books are stored, is what I've been told. But anywhere books are sold. On Instagram, Jen, Sue, and Chen. I love, just encouraging people and around the area of story work and just how we grow.
And I will make sure I link to those places on our website too.
Perfect.
On today's show notes. Yeah. It was really good to spend time with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jenny. It was a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you again, Jen, for being on today's podcast episode. Your gracious presence and wisdom ministered to me, and I know to other listeners as well. Friends, if you love today's conversation and you'd like to know more, I invite you to go get Jen's book, Dim Sum in Faith, How Our Stories Form Our Souls. It's published through IVP InterVarsity Press, and you can look for it on Amazon or other online bookstores. And I will link to Jen's book and website on today's show notes as well. Well, friends, here at the beginning of this new season of the podcast, I want to invite you to a few different ways that you can come alongside PRN. First of all, go subscribe to the Pause Renew Next podcast on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss an episode. Share it with your friends or post a favorite episode. You can rate and review it on your favorite podcast platform as well. That helps new listeners more easily find PRN. And if you'd like to support Pause Renew Next and the expenses of keeping a podcast up and running, you can also donate online at buymeacoffee.com/pause. That's buymeacoffee.com/pause. And last of all, but most importantly, I'd love you to keep this ministry in your prayers. Well, that is all for today's podcast episode. I'm Jenny Detweiler with PRN. Pause, renew, next. May you be encouraged on your journey with Jesus.